Manicero, le chant de ralliement de toutes les tropiques de l'Afrique à Cuba.
That's Cameroon's Manu Dibango. Remember him from Soul Makossa back in the day. And he's teamed up here with Cuba's Eliades Ochoa from, you may recall, from the Buena Vista Social Club. And, of course, he's a star in his own right in Cuba. And the Cuarteto Patria with one of my all-time favorite songs. It's a hokey little tune, but I just love it. I love all versions of it. El Manicero, and it is also known, you may know it, as the Peanut Vendor. It's from their collaborative album, Cubafrica, released in 1998. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and what do you know? It's Friday, April the 10th, 2015, and of course, it is time to free your mind. We've been through quite a week of serious week of news. And of course, there might be items left over that you didn't get a chance to address. So this is where we meet up to exchange information, opinions, and ideas, and our own insights about the headlines of the day. It's been a rough, rough week. And hopefully you are at the moment relatively unscathed, or just with a few minor scrapes and scratches, and in the way of being able to share your thoughts with us today at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888, and let's get the dialogue going right away. From California, Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hello, Harvey. How are you today?
Very good. Very good. And I just want to tell you and your great audience that, well, here it is again, National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes, April 16th. And it's a day when taxpayers can help each other reduce their stress by sharing neck rubs in safe environments. I do it in, like, I live in Berkeley. There's all these cafes. And me and my friends, we just share, you know, get up and give each other a neck rub. And, of course, everybody's drinking coffee, getting all uptight, so it's a vicious cycle. But it seems to work for us, and I think the world is really out of touch. We're mostly at each other's throats, so I think National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes, is the way to go if we want to get into some inductive healing here, some good stuff, you know, because there's so much bad stuff all the time.
Well, in fact, Harvey, I was hoping that you would bring us up to snuff on the crisis in your state, and that is the water crisis. What's going on with where you are?
I can certainly do that. Well, you know, what I'm advising everybody to do is, it turns out that coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear are second only to agriculture in their daily consumption of our freshwater resources. And since I pay particular attention to energy, I'm telling everybody that once manufactured and installed, solar panels use no water over the 20 to 25 year warranty in their production of clean, renewable electricity. So the first thing is we have to move away from the use of water by energy, and of course fracking. We have to stop fracking, because what the frackers do is they poison the wells, they poison the aquifers, and the last thing we need during a drought is to have whatever precious water we have poisoned by the frackers and the oil drillers. So we need to stop that right away and move to energy that produces no carbon. You see, that one of the problems about climate destabilization is that these greenhouse gases, like carbon dioxide, that's emitted 77% of the carbon dioxide emitted in America from coal plants, for instance. And what they do is they take the sun's infrared and they turn it directly into heat, and they emit the heat into the atmosphere. So the whole atmosphere is heating up. The ocean is acidifying because of the pumping of carbon dioxide into the ocean, and the whole thing is going wrong, and we're into climate destabilization. So we need to change our energy patterns, first of all, and replant our forests. In São Paulo, Brazil, they cut down a major portion of the rainforest, and the what they call the flying rivers, the rivers of condensation of water, stopped flowing towards São Paulo, and São Paulo ran dry water. A city of 20 million people running, you turn on the faucet, there's no water coming out. We really have to rethink everything here. And the drought, the California drought, is a major problem there. So that's my take on the drought.
Let me ask you, in the situation that California finds itself in right now, what do you think of Governor Brown's response, where he said, of course, he has placed a 25% mandate on a drawdown? Everybody's supposed to reduce their water usage by 25%, but he's exempted farmers, the agribusiness, and he's exempted, major businesses that consume a large amount of water, and it's been revealed that in fact fracking consumed more than 74 million gallons of water just last year alone. Do you think that Governor Brown's policy that he hopes to enforce now by penalty of fines and even imprisonment if it should come to that, that it is an equitable solution?
I feel that everyone has to be part of this big picture, and we can't exempt anybody from it, including the farmers and everybody else. So everyone has to take a hit, and unfortunately, until either the weather improves and we start getting some more water, or it's, basically this is a desert, and if it's not, it's hard to, it's really a difficult thing here, and it's hard. Everything is hard to say right now. It's all up in the air. It's like a coin that's up in the air, turning, 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 and it hasn't landed heads or tails yet. But these things are changing fast, and of course, the eye is looking at all the farming now and what's necessary, what's not necessary. It turns out that alfalfa, one of the biggest consumers of water in California, is used mostly for cattle feed, and a lot of that meat is exported. So, everything is being checked over now. So it's hard. It's really a moving picture, but we're all under stress. We're all under stress, and my thing is we got to move to photovoltaic solar energy as fast as possible, so as we save as much water as possible.
Thank you so much for your call today, Harvey.
Thank you.
Please do keep an eye on it, because I imagine we'll be talking about that very soon in greater detail when the coin has landed. Thanks a lot. Matt, you're on the air from New York City. Hello? Have we lost her? Okay, then she's not there. Sarah from Dallas, you're on the air.
Greetings to you, Utrecht, and to the PRN audience.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And I will once again hope that y'all have an enjoyable weekend, Yatrice. And this situation that Harvey, yes, ma'am. This situation Harvey just mentioned with this water shortage that they're talking about in California. And I've been reading and looking at a lot of other research information. And what it's telling me is that they are trying to get people off their land, because to me this sounds as though it's a scheme that's being ran. Yes, there's a problem with fracking, but it also tells you there's a scheme being ran because they want to get people off land, and the only way to do that is, as we have seen, where they could dam up the waterways so that people can't get water to irrigate their land and therefore make it inhabitable so that people could move off and sell at a loss. So this is something that, you know, Harvey and the other people might want to look into, because I find this to be something very nefarious and very devious that's being done in the works, because we've seen it done throughout the globe where you have choice lands and they want it. The only way for you to get it is for them to come up with some scheme by damming up the waterways and to get people off those lands. But
so why would this land, considering that most of it is desert, what is going to be the value here as you see it?
Well, the value there for me, for that, it could be maybe there's oil and gas that's under that soil.
They're certainly talking about gas, because they're saying that the fracking has now released dangerous levels of radon, cancer-causing radon, and they're concerned about that now, because the drought has just exacerbated the problem.
Exactly, Yatrice. It's not only that with the radon, but they had other useful gases that they can use, as well as other minerals, because there's still silver, there's still other minerals out there that they can get onto these soils. And, you know, we have some very devious and nefarious people that you are dealing with when it comes to the energy sector, as well as land grabbing. And it's not really as cut and dry as there is a drought. This is a drought that could be done on a purpose to get other areas, because they want to get other parts of California. They want to get those other parts of the land. But I'm somewhat digressing. I don't mean to trample on Harvey's topic of choice that he has mentioned, because I know that is his thing when it comes to conservation and things like that. So, and he's a bit more versatile with that particular topic. What I wanted to talk about, Yatrice, really quickly is this situation that we are seeing here. I wasn't going to speak much about it, but this thing with this cop killing that happened out there in North Charleston.
And in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. South Carolina with North Charleston, with Mr. Walter Scott and the police officer that has been fired, and he's been indicted. You know, the city acted very swiftly because they're trying to prevent a Ferguson from being on their hands. So they've turned it over to the state law enforcement department to investigate it rather than do it on their own, which is something I guess they have learned from the other mistakes. And they say, oh, look, we're not going to have that coming on our hands. So they cut it off at the pass. And that much I must commend them for trying to get ahead of that situation. But then again, you know, with this officer and what he has lied and done, and once again, we have this young man who took this video whose life is still hanging in a balance, because we have a Ramsey order who's on Rikers Island right now because of what he did with that video with Eric Garner. So this man who took this video, and he's a Dominican also, his life is being in the balance, and I hope that they learn from this mistake. And this young man, he's going to be more protected than Ramsey Orta was, to make sure he does not become a casualty as well. Because the other officer of Yatrice, which is the lying of these officers, because the black officer who ran up and checked this young man, you know, which really burns my grits, Yatrice, was when I see this man, after he was shot at, the cop walked up to him and handcuffed him behind his back. Now, to me, that is unconscionable. That's the same thing I did with Eric Garner. You know, it is unconscionable. And then the other black cop that ran up, put on his gloves, pretended though he checked for pulse or whatever. He didn't turn the man on his side, didn't release the handcuffs, because I already know he had to know the man was gone. Because the man had a bullet, they said a bullet went through his ear. So if a bullet went through a man's ear, you know it went through the brain. He automatically had to know this man is already deceased. At least take the handcuffs off and turn them on the side and pretend at least though you are administering some aid. Then lied on the police report. The cop who did the shooting, he lied. Then he planted evidence because he went back and he removed the taser from the ground, walk up to the body and drop it next to the body, you know, just to show that, you know, he has done this before. And then the black cop that was there, and he submitted his report, he also lied on his report and said he administered first aid when there was no first aid rendered to this man. So you are seeing, and I get over and over again, we always keep talking about we want police officers that look like us to be on the force, but you have got to look at a culture that you are part of. Michael Gray from 100 Black in Law Enforcement has been on your shows many times and other people and have told us. This is a culture that you become a part of. It doesn't matter what color you are in that uniform. You are just all blue. This policing agency, it comes out of the slave patrol. And
So having made all these observations, what are you driving at?
What I'm driving at, you trees, you know, we all can be talking, you know, because they're running and say, okay, we're going to put cameras on these people. Cameras don't is not going to do anything. Rodney King over 20 years ago had videotape evidence of what happened with his beating. Did it change anything?
You're telling us what will not work, what you are opposed to, but give us the flip side. What will work in your point of view?
Latrice, what I want to say that's going to work, I'm not going to say it on over this phone call and on this radio station, because everybody could read my mind. They know exactly what I know is going to work, because we cannot keep going on over and over again. These things keep happening. We run out here. We say, okay, you know, police murder. We're going to go, like attorney automatic say, they go the easy road for the civil suit. They get payout, and then the next crime happens, and then you're walking on these dead bodies, collecting money, and nothing is going to be done. We're going to have to take a stand and treat. And lastly, this idiocy of people getting on TV and apologizing and forgiving these people that killed their children, and these people who did not ask for their forgiveness, this has got to stop. This has got to stop, you three, because I heard the mother on there saying that. Now, if you keep forgiving people, you three, and you're still in this same brutal cycle, like if my husband was brutalizing me and I keep forgiving him and tell him, oh, baby, no, it's okay, you can whoop my behind, and anytime you get going already, I forgive you. What incentive is there for him to stop beating up on me?
All right. Well, we got your piece of the puzzle put in place today, Sarah. Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome, Yutri.
Thank you, and have a good weekend.
You too.
Perry, you're on the air. Perry, I don't know what city you're calling from.
Hello. Hello. I'm from Washington, D.C. Hi, how you doing?
Washington. Well, welcome, Washington. What does Washington, D.C. have to say today?
Okay. I don't know what Washington, D.C. has to say, but what I have to say is, you know, my issue is with the police departments up and down the East Coast, and despite all that's going on and all the enlightenment that has come out, you know, all the public is seeing now, and all that we've known historically about police departments, that they can still use smear campaigns and slander you, even on I'm just a young guy. I'm 45 years old. I'm not that young, but, you know, I'm 45 years old, and I'm no well-known person. So they can take an individual like me and use a smear campaign and gossip and completely ruin a person's life. And what I mean by that is, prevent a person from, you know, achieving any type of employment or any type of success that a person would ordinarily be in his life, from being able to support his kids, his family, because the people who he interacts with listen to what these police have to say. So I can understand it happened in a general community because, let's face it, we just got a lot of people who don't really think and they don't really care unless these things are happening to them. But in particular parts of the black community where we have critically thinking and conscientious people, the police and whatever department should not be able to get away with being able to put out rumors and just ruin a person's life and not allowing that person or preventing that person to, be carrying on his day-to-day life and supporting his kids and his family. And, you know, this person that's speaking of is me, of course, you know, you can tell. But, it's been going on for 4 years now, but it doesn't surprise me that the police can do this. I know they have the capability of doing this, but the acceptance of people, especially conscientious and critically thinking people who don't ask any questions, you know, they don't realize they only get details. They only get certain or selective details. So I think the solution is that, you know, before we go ahead and jump on board with whatever rumors or slander about anybody, from my level to anybody on up, that we do our homework. And, you know, we give a person, of that individual, the accused, the opportunity to make sure, you know, that he gets the opportunity to face his accuser and to defend himself, you know, and give his side of the story. Before, you know, we're acting out against this person and treating this person like he doesn't belong or that he deserves what he's going through.
Perry, I have to ask you a question. Is this the police or is this the media?
I'm sorry?
Is this the police or is this the media?
Oh, this is the police. This does not involve the media at all. It's the police on local levels who have put out rumors about me. I think, I don't know exactly what they are, but I think they're related to me being some type of sexual deviant, which, you know, there's absolutely no proof of that at all, because it's just not the case. But, you know, in me interacting and going day to day and interacting with the people I interact, I experience it. You know, I go through it and, you know, I'm shunned and I got to really work harder than usual to make it. And I just think it's ridiculous, you know. And like I said, I don't expect nothing different from some of these people in the police department, but just the people who are taking, you know, who would take a rumor and act out against a person with no firsthand knowledge, no type of verification or anything. I think that we just need to check ourselves when we're doing that, because, you know, you never know what type of, if you're being used as a pawn or, you know, what the situation is if you don't have this information. You know, and there's at least two sides to every story.
Thank you for your call today. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for allowing me to call. Have a good day.
This is what the forum is for. Thank you so much. Ma'at is back. You're on the air.
Yes. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Yes. Good afternoon, family. It's been a while since you've heard from me. I have three main comments. First, Jamal Powell was in the same pattern in terms of multiple shots. I think he had a small penknife in his pocket. He was no threat to anyone. There were people around him and one videotape and not afraid. Somehow, this whole pattern of being turned over and handcuffs put on is something that we lost sight of, and we lost sight of his situation, haven't heard of Pete. So I think that's something that will help us focus on these wanton killings. The second point is to Harvey and Sarah, who I think is closer to the situation with the drought. I have a recommendation for an excellent book. It's by Ilana Freeland, as in free the land, but without the. And it's called Chemtrails Harp, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth. That'll give you some heads up about the spraying of barium, stradium, aluminum, et cetera, on the plants, the animals, and the humans, and the creation of weather and weather patterns. The third point I want to make is on the tip of I think this was before you came to the USU Trees, on the tip of growing up with Dragnet and Jack Webb and his Just the Facts, Ma'am. And there's a book that will bring out what I was saying in terms of, and the book is called We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, or however you say that. And
Hebdo.
It's by Kevin Barrett as an editor. And it brings people like Barbara Honecker, who brings a very cogent analysis to 9/11. Remember, we don't see any plane at the Pentagon, really. And it deals with, well, there are two camps. I haven't seen the book, but in terms of looking at the review on Kevin Barrett's website, he also does Truth Jihad. I get his newsletter, and it's two camps, those who feel it was a false flag and those who just debunked the mythic media analysis and messages, such as the forensic analysis, the suicide of one of the chief of police, et cetera, et cetera. And I want to tie it to this German Wings situation, which very well might tie into the similar situation for Flight 317. Remember, Malaysian Airlines have had all these airlines disappearing, and we have a German airliner using an English name, and we also have what is obviously an explosion versus this whole suicide story. So I just want to tie in what is
reality.
Why
would you say it's obvious? It's obviously an explosion.
Yes.
The authorities haven't mentioned an explosion, and why would it be obvious to you?
Well, it's obvious because you look at the site. You know, there are pictures you can go to, and you can see the site. And if the plane had been a nosedive, you'd have a crumpled-up nose section, and you'd have the rest of the airplane. So, and plus, there were no bodies. There were only, I think, sizes of a suitcase or a briefcase. And then the story around the black boxes, you know, the missing memory card. And I have some experience on this because back in the day when USA Today was a fledgling newspaper, I was living in Miami. And I was the one, I was a stringer, and I was the one who picked up the cockpit recorder. And, you know, I had to read it and analyze it and deal with the regional manager at Miami International. So, you know, if you look at the aspects, and John Lear, he probably can be found on the internet, we can give some interesting analysis. He's the son of the creator of the Learjet and a very accomplished, thousands of hours pilot for both the CIA and commercial airliners. And his analysis of Flight 370, the one that they have no trace of, it went to Israel. They have a remote way, even before 9/11, is called uninterruptible autopilot. You can put that in your search engine, or it's called fly-by-wire, where the plane can be taken over and remote control. So according to John Lear, he says that 370 was in Israel, and apparently everyone killed, and then Flight 17 was put in that place, and it were over the Zionist part of the Ukraine. And there were reports of airplanes that supposedly were keeping it safe, but seemingly shot it down. And there's also the theory of the laser being, you know, how it was done. So
the thing is, we don't know. But I do know, what we do know is that in this most recent situation with the German airline, German Wings, that we do have an international group looking at it. So far, they have not determined that there was any explosion. They've not said anything yet. We don't know. So I don't know that we can be so safe and sure that there was an explosion. We just have to wait and see what their final determination is. It's still being investigated. They're still gathering evidence, and they have not yet concluded what exactly happened there, except that the evidence that they've gathered so far leads them to believe that this pilot basically crashed, purposely crashed the plane. So, and crashed it at an even greater rate of speed than would normally be for landing, that he actually revved up the engines in order to crash into the mountainside. So we'll see. We just have to wait and see.
Can I respond briefly to that, Utrice?
Sure.
Yes. First of all, within 24 to 48 hours, you had a whole narrative that was being pumped at you repeatedly, and it doesn't happen that way. If somebody wants to research it, it takes time to analyze the flight data recorded, which they didn't even find within that time period, and the voice cockpit recorder. The CEO of the German Wings airliner came on air and suggested that he hadn't actually heard it, but he had just read the transcript, which makes no sense.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. I'm always cautious about, after major tragedies, it is the customary thing to have waves of conspiracy theories. And I always caution to just wait a little bit, and see what the experts have to say, rather than jump to conclusions. And I keep reminding folks that when we saw the first beheadings, we had it even on this station, on this program, people saying, oh, that was fake, that was this, that was that. And I said back then, you ruling out the very real possibility that what looks fake to you was actually the rehearsal. And just recently, that's what the hostages said, that part of their ritual every day, of the ritual of torture, was to subject them to mock executions. So they did not know at any time whether the execution that was, whether they were, quote, in a rehearsal, or whether this was going to be the real thing. All we have to do for the time being, since none of us is an expert at aviation investigations, what we ought to do is just wait and see what they come up with, and then see what other scientists might come up with to counter whatever is the prevailing view. So let's not jump to any conclusions. Let's not act like we know exactly what happened. Just wait and see. Thanks for your call. From Mount Vernon, Jason, you're on the air. Hello, Jason. Okay. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
What a day it is. I would like to say thanks for your program, first of all, and having voices be heard.
Thank you.
To piggyback, yeah. I don't want to get into it too much of toe-to-toe with you, but just to piggyback off your simulated mock executions. This is something that has been going on for quite a while. Mock executions or simulated.
You're fading in and out, Jason. Are you walking or while you're talking? I'm switching into different signal zones?
No, I'm standing still. I'm standing still in my office. So now, okay. Are you able to hear me now?
Yes, but it's going in and out.
It's probably just the way. The nature of the interference, because we're talking such vital things.
Go ahead.
Let's see. I'll make an attempt, and forgive your listening audience if I come in and out. Dick Cheney and is known to be a very expert at mock simulations and mock aviation acrobatics. Case in point, 9/11, Vigilant Guardian. Our Guardian Vigilant, we have not just me, but our dear departed Michael Rupert, who discovered this, his book Crossing the Rubicon. He passed away, as you know. Michael Rupert is the one who discovered or shed more light on mock simulations of either executions or mock simulations of flight patterns during the same time real life events take place. So there lies the confusion, and there lies the sense of the sinister nature of things. I can go on and comment more about that, but I want to talk about another subject.
So then let's talk about the other subject.
Okay, thank you. We have a situation going on which is running rampant all over the United States, and that's the free will of killing black unarmed men and the free will of killing black unarmed women, as well as women, period. If you anyone does a Google search for police shooting up unarmed women, you'll see a whole lot of a list of different women being shot, but it's not being televised. It's not being in the media. It's not covering it. What you try to ask Sarah from Dallas, and you give her poignant, tough questions, tougher than I would imagine from other people who call. But I would like to answer the question about what you said is the best remedy for having these rash or this season of killing black folks. And my answer to that is to cease their funding. The police department is funded by the Board of Supervisors. The Board of Supervisors in each county gets federal funding. And once that federal funding is given, it goes into the subdivisions. So anyone's effort to stop police killing is to stop them in their paycheck. They get a paycheck for doing police officer duties. They get a paycheck for being a peace officer. Neither of the two, in certain situations, are they doing. They're violating these titles. They're not a peace officer when they stop you for a stop and frisk. They're not law enforcement or a police officer when they stop you just like this situation with Mr. Scott and shoot you in the back 8 times. My solution is this. And I don't care if the NSA is listening or the local police enforcement is listening, is to defend ourselves. And that means by any means necessary. And I am dead serious. The law enforcement, the judge, the marshal, NSA, the police department, they're all more than welcome to come and visit me. This is high time that we start to look at this issue in a more realistic manner. No more Al Sharpton's coming around. No more Pat Lynch coming around and being migrated and ushered into other cities as if he is the emissary of how to manage black folks. No more reincarnations of Willie Lynch to a Pat Lynch. No more of this. And you're the listening audience, which is probably preaching to the choir. I would have to address my Caucasians, European, and white folks, is to preach this to your own people, your backyard, because it's affecting the mindset of people. Two major points, besides the police killing and stopping them in their tracks with their funding, state funding, local funding, or federal funding, the other point is this. When this went down, there was a cookie cutter pattern taken out from a playbook of how to treat an unarmed man of color being shot by an officer. And that officer can be any officer. It could be Italian American. It could be Jewish American. It could be Irish American or Chinese American. It doesn't matter. Or black American, as you see. The point is this. There is such a quick rush of customized news and reporting to the people at large how this went down based on fabrications. I don't want to list it all to you, but we already saw how he turned the body over. He put the handcuffs on him. Another police officer, black, I might mention, claimed to do a CPR or a medical kit, but no medical kit was issued to him. No CPR was given to the Mr. Scott. And then the biggest point is this. Two big points. Their own police force, a blue wall of silence, their own lieutenants, their own sheriff covered for them, immediately covered for them.
second point of view, which is dastardly and disgraceful and criminal. The second thing is this. The local media channels in this North Charlotte, South Carolina, they, yes, monkeyed the police department's explanations. This is par for the course for us in the listening audience, because this is what they've been doing for 50 years, 60 years onward. It's just the point that it has not been televised. It's not been caught red-handed. The camera person has them dead to rights. They caught them red-handed. And we caught that the media, the newspapers, the local broadcasting station was like bobbing for apples. They, yes, monkeyed the police report as if it was the law, as if it was genuine and authentic. This is the common thread line for every police action done of an unarmed person of color or any unarmed person, black or white. They have a pattern now that they put into action. They dust off the playbook from the shelf. They turn off they make it look as if the victim is the criminal. He has no rights. He has no identity. And then they get their supporting officers to support the story. Not only that, is to reinforce and add cover for it. Then, great deal of disgrace, the local media does the same thing.
Well, thank you very much for your call today, Jason. I see that people will be contemplating what it is you have offered today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrees. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Where are you calling from, Khalil?
I'm calling from South Carolina. I've been here for 5 years, and I moved from the Philadelphia area, and I've also lived in New York during my formative years, about five. So I got a little bit of history. And I'm going to tell you about
Welcome, welcome, welcome. What are you sharing with us today?
I tell everyone about your show. Excellent.
Thank you so much. It's the byproduct of all of us chipping in.
Well, you know, you really bring another level to professionalism. You really, in other words, if you looked up journalism and professionalism conjoined in a dictionary, they should have your picture.
Thank you. Now, what is your contribution today?
Well, I really want to dovetail on the last caller from Mount Vernon, New York, because I have been I've been arrested, let's say, around six times, and two of those times I was guilty, you know, drug possession, and I bounced a check once, and you know, nothing major. But the third time I wasn't convicted, but I was charged with 13 felonies, which is pretty major, right? And I got through that with no charge. You had to drop the case; there was no evidence. So, but that actually, and I'm an educated person. I have an advanced degree, which is surprising. But anyway, my point is that lay people really don't understand, unless you really are deeply involved with the CJ system, the criminal justice system, how corrupt it is. And what happens is that the first thing folks need to realize, and this is dovetails into the last caller, a police report is a one-sided narrative. And that's very important for employers and everyone else to understand. It's a one-sided narrative. They can say whatever they want. And, you know, if you don't have good representation, that goes on the record. And that follows you. And being in this state now for 5 years, it's really disgusting. It's where I come from, everybody rides a bike. I have a car. I have two cars. But I like to ride a bike. But apparently in South Carolina, they don't like black men on bicycles. I have been pulled over three times on a bicycle. And it's really disgusting. So what my general point to this is that concerned citizens need to wake up. The law enforcement has gotten out of control. Now, the black community understands this. We have been suffering with this since Reconstruction. But the greater white community, they feel like they're not affected, many of them. So they don't care. Because when you live in the suburbs and you do the same thing that people in the inner city, quote-unquote, do, you're in the basement or you're behind a gated area. I've lived in those areas. That's what happens. And, you know, they just look the other way. They're not concerned. But young black people in the city, they do their dirt on the street, right? And poor people and people of color are policed differently. So I think that police officers have a hard job, and everyone doesn't need to be a cop. Everyone is not going to be good at it. And I'll put it like this. When I was taking statistics, and that was my focus in college, was statistics. All right, I was a researcher for a while. So you look at a bell curve, you have 3% on each end. You got the bottom end and the top end. And what you were asking law enforcement to do, we're drawing from a general pool of people. And we're asking a lot of unexceptional people to do an exceptional job. And that is not always a good fit. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely, I do.
And absolutely. See, my minor was sociology, which encompasses criminology. A lot of people don't understand that any credible sociologist will tell you the police force is a gang. And not in a negative sense, but it fits all the criteria. It is a gang. It's just a legitimized gang. And what happens, just like in many workplaces, what happens is that if you don't fall in line, if you don't lie to your fellow officer, you're going to get blackballed and you're going to put yourself in jeopardy. And you're going to either get killed or, you'll be driven out of the force. I have cops who are friends. And if they walked up to me, for instance, right before I moved from Philly, I didn't even know my neighbor was a cop. He looked like a thug, quote unquote thug. I thought he was a drug dealer. But he was out on disability, and he wanted to have a block party, which means you got to get everybody in the community to sign a petition, blah, 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 to get permission to have this block party. And he pulled me to the side. He said, "Yo, Khalil, I'm going to tell you something." He said, "Everybody on the police force, they just like everybody on the street. You got gamblers, drug addicts, thieves." And Philadelphia has, right, every 7 years, you have a huge scandal in Philadelphia with cops who shake down drug dealers, sell the drugs, involved in prostitution. Power corrupts. But I'm going back to sociology. I think police need to be better educated because, like here in South Carolina, I swear these people, I hate to say it, but there is a truth to the dumb Southerner thing. These people are ignorant, and it's like they wake up and they have a jar of ignorance and they just slather in the morning. And they're okay with being ignorant. They're just okay with it. If they had some sociology, they would understand how to police a little bit better. And we're in a bad way. I think we need the Black Panthers back. And look how they got a bad name. Now, all they did was the same thing that Clive and Bundy did, right? Those people, they had weapons, loaded weapons, trained at federal agents. And they walked away. Now, you have all these unarmed black people, and we get shot, right? We get shot. But the Black Panthers, Reagan couldn't stand it. They read the law. They were educated young people in college. They said, okay, you know what? This is legal. We're gonna protect our community, and we're going to give free lunches. And we're going to feed people. But no, the power elite, they didn't like that. And now when you say Black Panther, it has negative connotations. But if you look at the history, actually, it wasn't all that negative at all. But that's, victors write the history. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed. I do.
And
I want to thank you for calling and contributing this today.
Well, I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too, Khalil. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
We have William. William, I'm sorry to tell you, but here's the bad news. You're going to have to make it kind of quick.
Okay.
You have about 5 minutes.
I'll make it quicker than that. How is that?
You don't have to, but you can have all 5 minutes.
Okay.
Where are you calling from, William?
I'm sorry. I'm calling you from New Jersey.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Okay.
Welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you. I agree with most of the callers have said, but in terms of a remedy, I may not be as radical, but I think all police officers, and this may affect all public servants, should have provide for employment the own E&O insurance.
I've talked about that. Way, E&O meaning errors and omissions.
Errors and omissions. That's correct.
Yes.
All licensed people who have licenses for other sorts of things, lawyers, et cetera, nurses, must carry E&O insurance to cover any liability, because that means the liability is not on the employee. I'm sorry, the employer. It's on the employee. Therefore, there would be great pressure for those who are have to provide their own E&O insurance to maintain a standard. And if they can't maintain that standard to be employed, if they can't provide the E&O insurance, they're not going to work in that field.
Well, some people would say, William, that if you require, because I've raised it and this has come back to me, if you require E&O insurance, that will also gives an incentive, or it may give an incentive for police officers not to do their jobs, to be so careful about basically incurring damage to their insurance policy that they would actually not do their jobs in order to keep a clean record and not incur additional expenses. What do you say?
Well, there are other folks who are practicing with licenses who have jobs, some in critical care, and they're providing service and they're employed.
But they don't have the services that they provide come under malpractice, if you will, malpractice insurance. Police officers have literally the authority to take your life, which puts them
Correct.
In a particularly special category.
They definitely are special. I knew that in the I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. But more to reason. Because they can take your life. And they have been taking lives.
Uh-huh.
More to reason.
So how will this program work in the way you envision it?
Well, I didn't give, I heard the last comment, I must be honest, I didn't give it much in-depth analysis. It just became to me from hearing your last few calls, I decided to call you. But I'm sure your audience, the people out there in the community, may have other ideas on how we can expand the idea. Even though I personally feel that it will never happen, the unions for the police are so strong that they would never allow that. But it would eliminate major issues, financial burdens, all the municipalities who pay for wrongful death suits. The taxpayers
Correct.
Are paying for it.
Correct.
And I'm sure that if it's presented in such a way to taxpayers as an alternative, it may get some traction.
Okay. Well, thank you. You're
okay.
Very true to your word. You went a whole minute under five. Thank you, William, for your contribution today. Well, that brings us to the end of the program. Much that was offered today, I would say, for us to consider over the weekend, but take a break over the weekend and rest up a little, take it easy, defrag your mind. It's the only one you have, and it is the most sought-after piece of real estate. Everybody wants to own the property between your ears, and don't let them. Always be very careful to protect your brain. It's one of the best things that you have and one of the most important assets you will have for the rest of your life. But thank you so much for being with us today and taking advantage of this opportunity to just converse with each other and trade ideas and thoughts and opinions in a very sincere way and in a mature way and in a responsible way. Thank you so much for the courage to offer them up for public inspection. Keep it right here on PRN.FM, and I want to ask you to let me know how you're thinking about this program and about the topics we cover and the things you would like to see, even. You can write me at leadstories@gmail.com and on Facebook, Lead Stories with Utrice Lead. Today is the final send-off for Dr. Joseph Ben Yochanan, and that is taking place in Harlem today. We wish him good speed in his next life. And we know that there's a whole host of people waiting there to welcome him. Godspeed. And Godspeed with you too. Bye-bye.